From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a new face in the Republican Party decided to run for Congress. Dr. Jim Maxwell is a longtime local neurosurgeon, born in Pittsburgh, lives in East Rochester. He was going to challenge Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, who passed away in March. And after last month's primary, Dr. Maxwell is now set to face Democrat Joe Morelli in November. Dr. Maxwell will often say he's new to this, and that's a good thing. He's not as polished or as scripted as many other politicians. He speaks from his heart, and he wants to, in his words, help fix Congress. But what does that mean? Well, this hour we're going to find out in our first visit with the Republican running for Congress in the 25th Congressional District. Dr. Jim Maxwell, welcome to Connections for the first time. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you. I must begin by a disclaimer saying I am a sustaining member of WXXI.
Oh, we never ask folks that. I didn't even want to know that.
Well, I am, and my late wife and I have been contributors and supporters of WXXI for 25 years.
Now, well, no matter how you vote, et cetera, et cetera. That's very kind. But now I have to be even harder on you this hour. Thank you. And by the way, we tell all of our listeners the websites, if you want to learn more information on Dr. Maxwell, it's Dr. Jim Maxwell, drjimmaxwell.com, the website for information there. And you had decided to challenge Congresswoman Louise Slaughter before her passing. So let's start with why you decided you wanted to make this this your first race in politics, Dr. Maxwell.
Well, I'll go back to college. I went to college at Georgetown, Washington, D.C. I said there must be more to college than biology and physics and chemistry and studying in the library till 2 a.m. And I hung with some people who were quite political. And next thing you know, I was spending half my time on Capitol Hill. I was drawn and fascinated to the place, and there came a fork in the road where I had to make a decision. Is it going to be medicine, or am I going to pursue this dream of politics? I chose medicine and have been very happy ever since. However, the virus never completely eliminated from the system. And indeed, in 2010, for about a month, I threw my hat in the ring and ran against Louise Slaughter in the Earmuff District, Buffalo, Lake Ontario to Rochester. And nobody knew that because it was so brief, but my wife, who had breast cancer, took quite sick, and I said, I can't do this now. So I caved and dropped out. And then the whole thing got resurrected a couple of years ago, and 2.5 years ago, I started putting the pieces together, figuring whether or not this was something I ultimately wanted to do. When I said yes, I threw my hat in the ring against Louise Slaughter, and here I am.
And so on her record, what stood out most to you? What were you most disappointed in with her record?
Her, as the whole Congress, I think, has become so ossified, so partisan, so bitter that they weren't getting things done. And as I like to say, Lincoln said, the Bible before him, a house divided against itself cannot well stand. And that's what we have now. We have a divided house in Congress where nobody speaks to each other. And I think with the years that she'd been there, she became more and more and more pushed into the partisan corner. For example, they say the Russians tried to influence the election. Whether that's true or not is to be determined. But there's no doubt that they played a role in social media. And what did they do with the fake news and twists on stories? They tried to pit one portion of the electorate against the other. They knew the way to make democracy not work in this country is to pour gasoline on the partisan divide. And it actually is this inability to get things done due to partisan favors, partisan messages from the bosses, that I actually decided, what can I do to stop that? And that was the prime mover on why I put my hat in the ring.
I mean, you're certainly right in that we do know that the Russians have figured out that on social media, Americans get very bent out of shape very quickly, and they try to kind of stir up that emotion and pit other against other or side against side. That's true. But you've got some political leadership in Washington saying, enough with investigating this whole Russia thing. Wrap it up already. If you go to Congress, are you going to say, yeah, wrap it up. We're done with this. We don't need to know anymore.
The truth will out. And I think
through Mueller?
for one. Leave him alone and let him do his job.
Okay.
But it's perplexing, interesting to me that we've gone this far and there's no smoking guns. It may come to little things. I just don't know. But
I don't know what's little about someone like Paul Manafort's record. I mean, those things aren't necessarily maybe what you're saying is no smoking gun on actual collusion of an audio tape of Donald Trump saying to Vladimir Putin, yes, we're in this together.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But short of that, there's some stuff that should trouble everybody, I would think.
Well, where there's smoke, there might be fire.
Okay.
And I was
right.
shocked to find out that Paul Manafort is in solitary confinement as we speak.
You're shocked about that?
Solitary confinement is pretty awful.
You're worried about the treatment of Paul Manafort?
not really. If he's guilty, he should be he should be brought to task. Solitary confinement for anybody in my book is cruel and unusual punishment.
We should eliminate it for all people.
Absolutely.
Okay. Interesting. Dr. Jim Maxwell, our guest for the hour, grew up here locally. So when you think back to your childhood, are you somebody who thinks about the good old days? Was it better than it is now? Is that part of what's motivating you?
Yeah. Time does things to your memory. And the good old days, for all of us, I don't think were as good as we think they were. And I know there are tectonic, huge forces at work in the world to explain why the parking lot out the window behind me at Kodak yeah. office is empty. But when I grew up in Rochester, I heard Rochester referred to as the Athens of the North. And I have a deep love of ancient Athens. When I was in high school, I studied ancient languages and ancient cultures, and I fell in love with Athens as being a place of birthplace of democracy, of where people were proud to be citizens, where they served each other. And Rochester had great cultural institutions, great music, great art, great universities. And when I went away to college and medical school, I bragged about Rochester being just one of the best places in the world. And when I look around now and I have 5 grandkids, I don't think it's the same. I think things have changed a great deal. And I want to see what I could do coming off the sidelines to see if I can change that.
Talking to Dr. Jim Maxwell, who is running in the 25th Congressional District against Joe Morelli in the November race here. And whenever I told Dr. Maxwell before the program, whenever I have a Democrat in the studio, our listeners want to know, well, were they a Clinton or a Sanders supporter? Whenever there's a Republican, the listeners want to know, is this a Trump supporter? Did you vote for Donald Trump?
What I do in the voting booth was and always will be a secret. The only person I told who I voted for in that voting booth is my late wife. And I'm not trying to dodge the question, but that is the truth. I think secret ballots are secret, and it is one of the most beautiful things of our democracy. In addition to that, I've seen what happens when, particularly just after the election, when everybody was all either upset or popping the champagne corks. And if you said I voted for X, if I voted for her or if I voted for him, you were instantly labeled. I look forward, not backward. That was then. Let's get over the election of 2016 and move forward. But I'm not telling you who I voted for.
All right. So I think I think the latter part of your statement there on guilt by association is true and a problem. But I still think it's a dodge. But you're not going to break it on this program.
I'm never going to break it.
Okay. Do you think this president is doing a good job? Are you happy with his performance?
Yes and no. I take people one at a time, case by case, issue by issue. And the first thing I'll say about Donald Trump is I think he focused a spotlight, gave a microphone to people who were unseen and unheard. And that would be the working people of this country who saw their towns and villages decimated by jobs going overseas, by change in technology, robotics, by the invasion of the opioids, and nobody was listening. And he listened, and he made them the center of his campaign, and actually they put him in the White House. So kudos to listening and caring about people who I don't think were a priori cared much about.
I think that's well said. I think the interesting question then becomes, is he governing in a way that demonstrates he did care? And for example, these working class communities, you can point to the so-called Rust Belt, but there's mid to small size cities across the country that used to make things that don't really make things anymore. And you hear some Americans and some political leaders saying that's just the process of globalization that's going to happen with automation. And then you hear others, not just on the political right, on the Bernie Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez left, the Matt Stolers of the world, saying no, it's economic concentration that we used to penalize trust. We used to bust trust. We used to not allow these companies to merge and merge and merge and merge, the Time Warners of the world, et cetera. Do you think the policies of this White House reflect a care for the working class?
I think in Trump's mind, they do.
But in your mind?
I think for the most part, yes. I think you're equating a couple of things. Okay. Income inequality versus globalization. They really are two different things. I think Trump was brand new. He didn't. There's a learning curve to being president. And I think in the beginning it was a bit herky-jerky. But it's interesting. I don't think he's done anything that he said he wasn't going to do. I think he's one of the people that is pretty true to his pre-election platform. And I don't think anybody knows the right way to straighten out world trade. I don't think anybody for sure knows how to deal with the trade imbalance. He's trying with such things as tariffs. And
Do you support tariffs?
Not really. I think they're at the end of the day, they're disruptive to true economic forces. Wherever can produce the best product at the cheapest price wins the game. Putting obstructions in the way and false things like tariffs, I think, at the end of the day. But on the other side of the coin, he's certainly gotten China's attention, hasn't he?
I guess. I'm not sure it's fruitful. I don't. Maybe you think it's more fruitful.
Well, I once did a spinal tap on a young girl. She was dying of a malignant brain tumor, but she was the sweetest thing. And they said, "Go in and do a spinal tap on her," and she was suffering so much, mm-hmm. and. So the technique that I used was I told her I was going to do this, but that she couldn't laugh. If she laughed, it would all be ruined. So I fell on the floor and I said, whoops, somebody put a banana peel there. And then I went and cleaned her back off. And then I went around in front and I peeked, are you laughing? And by total distraction, I got through it. And it was done. And she said, when are we going to start? And by analogy, I sort of wonder whether all of this confusion and running around and screaming and hollering isn't not a trick, but a technique to get what he wants to get done.
Getting everyone else distracted by the different histrionics where his real work is more under the radar?
Correct. I think that perhaps North Korea was some of that. And I wonder whether the tariffs are some of that, too.
Okay.
I don't know if he really believes that slapping higher, more and more tariffs to punish X and Y and Z countries is going to work.
Okay. What about the tax cuts that were passed? Do you support them?
Yes and no. I think 21% for industry really makes us competitive. I really do. Obama wanted a 28. So the thinking in Washington was tax cuts on industry will make us competitive. And I think it has. I heard that perhaps this next quarter is going to show 4% growth in GDP. That was the number that was slammed out, 4%, 4%, 4%, and we may get there. I think that part of the tax plan is working. The repatriation of all the billions of dollars that were stashed in banks in, of all places, Jersey in the English Channel. I mean, I'm a big fan of George Eastman. And when I read his biography by the lady Elizabeth, I can't remember her name, Breyer, I got to the last chapter and I said, I can't get through this. I know I'm going to break down. And so I read it on his grave one sunny June day. But I think, what would George Eastman do when 85% of the world's photography was done on Eastman Kodak film? What he would do saying, you can't bring the profits back to Rochester. And so that part of the Trump thing to repatriate all of these dollars that are sitting in offshore banks was great. I believe, you know, Apple's going to build a new factory and so-and-so is going to build a new plant. And I hope some of that money trickles down to the savings and Eastman savings and loan in Rochester.
But who is so-and-so? I mean, I know we kind of laugh at this, but a lot of the, you know, take Carrier, take a number of these promises that don't necessarily turn up. I'm not sure we're just buying rhetoric here. Are we falling for the banana peel on the floor here? is the question.
Time will tell. Time will tell. Okay. I think it's an attempt. I think it's a serious attempt. Now, to go further into the tax thing, I didn't have my finger on the button, and the ink is dry on that piece of legislation. So I'm going to go to Congress.
Fair.
But the salt taxes.
Okay.
State and local tax deductions, which I do think hurt New York.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking on these is we're trying to get a sense for, if you are in Congress, are you a, we're going to use a tired old term, but are you a maverick who votes against your party 20% of the time, 30% of the time? Are you going to vote with the GOP agenda 98% of the time? I mean, I'm trying to figure out if you would have voted no on any of this stuff.
I wasn't there. I don't know. But I will tell you, I will vote 100% of the time against my party if it harms Monroe County.
And the salt issue, state and local taxes, is that, would that have been enough to cost you?
Maybe.
Cost you your vote?
Maybe. I my druthers would have been if you got to swallow that poison pill, spread it out over 10 years, to abruptly change the ground rules for New Yorkers.
Sure.
Was very hurtful.
But you're not saying you would have voted against it.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure which the teeter totter would have been more weighted on.
I don't mean to be rude, but you're running for Congress. How do you not know if you would have voted yes or no?
I think the benefits of reduction of the industrial tax and the purported get to 4% GDP would have been enough, if I believe that was going to happen, to vote yes on the plan. On the state and local taxes, it's not for now. And I'm not trying to support my doctor friends and the 1% and so on and so forth. What I'm afraid of is when the East Rochester School Board sits down 10 years from now with a budget and they have to deal with the fact that the high earners have all moved to Florida. Taking with them a huge amount of state and local taxes, how are they going to balance the budget? I'm worried about the future in that regard.
The Golisano move sort of writ large. That's happening, you're thinking.
Absolutely. I sit in the doctor's lounge at the hospital, and doctors in their 50s, surgeons in their 50s talk whether it's going to be North Carolina or Florida. Now, I bought a cemetery plot here. I'm going nowhere. I was born here. I've lived here. I'm going to stay here. I don't care about salt taxes. I call Monroe County my people. They are my people. And I'm not leaving. I don't care what they do with the taxes.
One more question on Trump, because I think it ties to an event we saw in Rochester this past weekend. Some of his harshest critics say, this is not a, just a bad president. This is a man who's a racist. Do you see a racist in Donald Trump?
He could do a lot better on race, and he could do a lot better with women. The way I have said it in the past, I take it him issue by issue. And given the fact that there's a learning curve to being president, given the fact he's new at this, given the fact of his style, brash and immediate, not necessarily well thought through, shooting from the hip, when I get to Washington, and if I meet him, I'm going to ask for his cell phone. And when I get it, I'm not giving it back. And the purpose of that...
You think he's going to give you a cell phone?
Well, I don't think... He probably won't meet with me. there are... I have some issues with Donald Trump. Some big issues. And but overall, I think it's more positive what he's doing than negative. The negative is style, words, lashing out at people that shouldn't be lashed out at, saying things that shouldn't be said. That's my issue with Donald Trump.
This past weekend, we saw another protest, a demonstration, Black Lives Matter. And I'm curious to know, I mean, you grew up here. You were born in Pittsburgh. You grew up here. You went to Catholic schools?
Yes.
Went to McQuaid?
Correct.
And, you know, so the people who lead these demonstrations want us all to sort of rethink how we got where we got in life. And I'm curious to know, do you think white privilege is real? Do you think you benefited from white privilege?
I probably did, unbeknownst to me. Yeah, I think I did. I think you can go way, way back to slave days and... there is such a thing as white privilege. Hopefully, as the years and decades go into the future, any vestige of that will fade. A way of trying to let people get into my heart is to say the following. I have five grandkids, okay? Two of them are girls. And I look at those kids and I say, I want to work my fingers to the bone to do whatever it is that I can to ensure that those grandkids have at least as happy a life as I had as a kid and beyond. And I don't see any reason why we can't get there. We're a great country with great...
For all kids.
Oh, for all kids.
Absolutely.
See, when I ran, I still am a neurosurgeon. When I run my practice, all I see are people in trouble. I don't see Democrats, Republicans, rich, poor, white, black, Latino. That all goes away. I see people who are in trouble, and I work my fingers to the bone to help them. I am color, sex, rich, poor, totally blind in what I have done for 38 years, and I'm not going to change that.
So before we turn to healthcare, which we're going to do in our second half hour, and some listener questions with Dr. Jim Maxwell, who's the Republican running for Congress in the 25th District. By the way, jump on Dr. Jim Maxwell, drjimmaxwell.com, for more on his background, his story, and the issues that he wants to focus on in Congress. What do you think is going to heal racial divisions in this country? And who do you think is most responsible for the racial divisions right now?
Well, I think the racial divisions are largely historical. I mean, come on, we had slavery here. And, you know, you can get in the car and drive, I don't know how many blocks from where I'm sitting right now, and see the wonderful statue of Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony. And when I get in Congress, I want Frederick Douglass of Rochester, the Frederick Douglasses of Rochester and the Susan B. Anthonys of Rochester to come to my office and get me to pass federal legislation that would do in some small way what those two people were able to accomplish. They both pounded the door of the federal government to get women's suffrage and to end slavery. And they both were successful. You know why they were successful? Because it was the right thing to do at the end of the day. And I think with that spirit, I think we will be better 25 years from now than we are.
All right. So as we go to break, what's issue one? You go to Congress. You win in November. What's priority one for Dr. Jim Maxwell in Washington?
Priority number one is to economically revitalize Monroe County in any way, shape, or form that I can.
We're going to get a short break, and we're going to come back to your phone calls, and we will talk healthcare. This is a man who has been a neurosurgeon, has worked in healthcare most of his entire life, and here in Rochester, still practicing. So we'll talk as he sees the healthcare landscape and much more with Dr. Jim Maxwell here in studio on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, when it comes to graduate school for filmmaking, it's roughly 50-50 men and women. When it comes to films that come out of Hollywood, it's about 96% directed by men. Only one woman has ever won the Oscar for Best Director. So what gives? Is there sexism in Hollywood when it comes to the director's chair? What might change that? A new documentary explores the question. We'll meet its creator next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's start with Don in East Rochester on the phone with Dr. Jim Maxwell, an East Rochesterian to an East Rochesterian. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I want to ask Dr. Maxwell what he thinks of the Affordable Care Act, because if we remember correctly, the Affordable Care Act was thought up, it was invented in a right-wing think tank in Washington, I believe it was the American Enterprise Institute. It was unrolled by a Republican governor in Massachusetts named Mitt Romney, so I don't know why he doesn't call Romney Care, and it was pounced upon by President Obama because he thought it would be the thing that would get the Republicans on board with this because it was their own idea. They didn't, and they rejected what is essentially a conservative, pro-free enterprise type thing. I personally wish the Affordable Care Act, I use it as a basis to go forward into socialized medicine. I'll come right out and say it. Do you support at least the Affordable Care Act?
I support some of it. Such provisions, I think, are great as pre-existing medical conditions should be no barrier to getting coverage. I support no cap on lifetime use of health care. I support the age of 26 to be under your parents' insurance plan. I support the expansion of Medicaid, which more than anything else, benefited Americans without health insurance. The mandates and you see, in my opinion, the 130 million people in this country who get medical insurance through their jobs are reasonably well satisfied. Yes, there's high deductibles. It's costly. At the other end of the spectrum, I believe we as a people have an obligation to support those who cannot afford health care. I don't think there should be anybody in this country who doesn't have health care. But what is in the thin slice in the middle between having everything covered under Medicaid and on the top having a fairly satisfactory healthcare plan through your insurer are people making more than $43,000 a year, but not enough to enforce to buy healthcare. My premise on healthcare is to go back to the drawing board and do it all over again. It's a mystery to me, and part of the reason why I'm running for Congress that not a single Republican voted in favor of Obamacare. There must have been one, at least one, who thought it was a good idea. And the constraining straitjacket of partisan politics does not allow going forward in a thoughtful manner. On the other side of the coin, it was hardly for repeal and replace, not a single Democrat. And how can we so divide the working through of this problem in such a manner? My main gripe about healthcare is that it talks about coverage. Who's covered? who isn't covered. And the going forward of Mitt Romney in Massachusetts with his plan that is still in existence and the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, was to let's get people covered who aren't covered. I get that. But the real elephant in the room, the real 800-pound gorilla in healthcare is the cost. It's too expensive. If it were half as expensive as it were, we wouldn't be having this discussion and argument back and forth. People would just buy it because the benefits of being having health care are phenomenal. And everybody knows that. When you're sick, medicine does a great job. Back in the 1800s, they gave you a mustard pack and put leeches on your skin. Medicine was a joke. But medicine has become so, so good that I think there's a fundamental understanding in society that it's needed, necessary, and I want it. The barrier is the cost. And I could go on all day on how it got to be so expensive. But, you know, I under Obamacare, I heard we're going to bend the curve. We're going to bend the cost curve in the future. That's not good enough. We have to have an active program to reduce the cost of healthcare.
What's step one?
Step one is to there's a plan that employers pay for health care currently, for example. 81% of employers in this country allow their employees to choose from only one insurance company. Only one. I understand why. They go and shop the best deal, and if they deliver 100% of their employees to one insurance company, they get a couple of percentage points off the cost. But what if we put the patients in the driver's seat? I'll go back to when I was a kid to offer some explanation. My father was a surgeon. And he typed up bills. My mother typed up the bills, okay? And my job as a kid was to fold the bills, put them in the envelope, lick it, and put a stamp on it. And it didn't take long to notice, for example, that an appendectomy that my father did as a surgeon was $400. And as I sequentially over month after month after month sealed the envelopes, I saw $10 payments, $390, $380, $370. And then I would see a bill when it got down to maybe $225 or $220, and my father would write a note, the remainder is forgiven. And we would send that out. And back in those days, the provider, my father, the surgeon, my father, face-to-face with the patient who was sick and was routinely asked, hey, doc, how much is this going to set me back? And there was a negotiation, at least by face, between the provider and the patient. And my father would never have charged $20,000 for an appendectomy. There was a market force going back and forth, and a market force where, out of kindness, enough is enough. They paid some. Let's forgive the rest. They can't afford it.
Have you done that yourself? Let me just quote from one of your videos, your campaign videos, if I could. You say, quote, for 35 years, I've been listening to my patients. If they didn't have insurance or they couldn't pay, I took care of them anyway, because people always come first. And that implies you sort of either went outside the rules or kind of intervened yourself. Did you do that?
Absolutely. When I was talking to a patient and I knew a surgery was going to be proposed, I would scan the face sheet. And if I saw insurance, none, I would sort of indirectly bring it up and say, you know, by the way, I never let money get in the way of medical decisions. And if people have no insurance, my care is free. I never bill them at all. Because I truly believe economics should never get in the way of medicine.
Everyone's going to want Jim Maxwell to be their primary care, their surgeon, their anesthetist. Everyone's going to want you in every phase of healthcare, but they can't get you. And what is the kind of system? Because we can't rely on every doctor to be Jim Maxwell saying, look, forgive that bill. Forgive that bill, right? There has to be a system in place, right?
There has to be a system in place. But thinking this forward, how did medicine get to be so expensive? And I traced the roots to 1965. Medicare was started, Medicaid was started, and it became a game of OPM, other people's money. And decisions were thereafter made behind the cloak, in the closet, in the name of the patient. But the patient was extruded. And currently, when you engage the healthcare system, it's kind of like, in terms of economics, it's kind of like Forrest Gump and a box of chocolates. You know, you never know what you're going to get. It's a mystery. And the patients are powerless to do anything about it. I got a bill. You know, I'm uninsured and I got a bill for my hospital stay and it's $32,000. What are you going to do about it? Pay it or go bankrupt. That's no way to run a system. And if we could somehow, using employers as the bedrock of financial support for healthcare, but allow them to give to their employees X amount of dollars that they would have spent on healthcare. The company gets a deduction off the for that expense, but to allow the employee to keep it in a privileged account and buy their own healthcare. And at the end of the year, if there's a remainder, they can slide it over to their personal side and pay tax on it, income tax. So it's a win-win-win-win-win. Employer says, oh, thank God, now I don't have to run an HR program and I don't have to deal with this. I can just slide money over to my employee. My employee can shop the market in a real way with an incentive to, hey, you know, if I keep it at the end, good for me. And the government gets a cut on when and if any monies are slid over. But the point of the whole thing is not the dollar. Don't follow the dollars. Don't follow the money. Follow who's driving the car. The patient is put back somewhat in the center of the choice situation.
Why haven't they done this? This sounds pretty easy the way you map it out. How come it hasn't been done?
That's because I haven't been in Congress before.
DrJimMaxwell.com for more information there. You're up against an opponent who is in favor of what he calls Medicare for All. You hear a lot of Democrats talking about that this year. He says it's not exactly single payer. He's open to single payer on a national level, but he is in favor of Medicare for All as he maps it out. I assume you've got a complaint with Medicare for All or single payer. What would that be? Is it cost?
Oh, yeah, let's start with the cost. The cost for Medicare for All is projected, even under the Bernie Sanders formula, to be about equal to the total federal budget. Trillions. We're going to double the federal expenditures overnight by going to Medicare for All? I don't think so. Like, for example, in California, they've been bringing this up over and over for the state to have Medicare for All. And even Jerry Brown said, hey, there's no way we can afford this. It's going to sink the ship of state. It's way too much money, number one. Number two, it freezes the cost. For example, a hernia operation gets reimbursed at $500. And Medicare for All said, look down the list, hernia, okay, $500. What thereafter is the pressure to reduce that? There's none. There's none. There's no competition goes out the window. Number three, I worry that as big-hearted as government employees are, that when you get tangled up in the healthcare system, i.e. you're sick, your spouse is sick, you got cancer, the phone calls are going to go where? They're probably going to go to my office in Congress or call your congressman. They'll fix, you know. I think the government is great, but I don't think they're capable of running an organization that is 20% of American GDP.
Have you talked to colleagues in the UK and other countries where they do try this, and have you had conversations about how it's working there?
Yes. I mean, every system works. There are not people lying, dying, bleeding to death on the street in any country at least in the industrialized world. What other countries accomplish is perhaps a better healthcare outcome at a cheaper price. France, 11% of GDP, England, 12% of GDP, Germany in that same ballpark, sort of half of where we are. Why is that? And I think it goes to the non-competitive arrangements or shenanigans that go on behind the curtain in the name of the patient, but not necessarily to benefit the patient.
I want to get back to your phone calls. Oh, I think we lost. Did we lose Susan? Oh, we've got Susan. Susan and Webster next up. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I was just wanted to ask Dr. Maxwell what he's done to help the women in Monroe County.
Dr. Maxwell, what have you done to help women in Monroe County is the question from the caller. Go ahead.
I married an amazing one and raised a great family with her to start with. the Me Too movement, I just stand in awe of, I must say. And back when I was just crunching along, raising a family and trying to be the best neurosurgeon I possibly could, I sent my girls to Mercy High School. And they did a great job. And I talked to the principal and I said, you know, you got a great school here, but it's got a huge problem. It's way too expensive. You got to do something about that. And so my wife and I ran the first capital campaign at Mercy. And at the end of it, brought in nearly $9 million. And a significant portion of that, and this is the personal gift of my wife and I, is a scholarship fund for single mothers who received the Janice Maxwell Scholarship for their kids who no way could afford to go there. And I get their report cards at the end of every year. I get Christmas cards from them every year. They just named another one whose mom was a victim of domestic violence, living in a refrigerator box with a brilliant daughter. But I realize this is a one-off, little by little by little, where my wife and my heart was. And that's not going to accomplish anything on a societal level. And that's part of one of the reasons I decided to throw the hat in the ring.
Well, thank you, Susan and Webster, for that. And on the subject of women's health care, we could be really looking at a new paradigm in health care. And there's going to be a new member of the Supreme Court. We could see Roe overturned. Do you want to see Roe v. Wade overturned?
I am pro-life, with exceptions. I've always been that way. Whoever they nominate for the Supreme Court, I hope they have a profound respect for the Constitution. I hope they have a big heart and understand both sides of this issue. But I am pro-life.
So you want to see Roe v. Wade overturned?
I'm going to leave that to the courts to decide.
Well, the reason I ask, you're certainly right to say that would be in the Supreme Court's hand.
Right.
But there could be legislative either remedies or reactions if Roe is overturned, depending on the language of the justices. Now, the justices could say, turn it back to the states, in which case pretty quickly you could see 20 states overturn it. Or the justices could say, it is akin to murder, and we would have no option at the state level. Do you think abortion is murder?
I have to say, I think it is.
So should there be criminal penalties for abortion?
Absolutely not.
That's what I sort of don't understand, I admit. If you think something is murder, how could there not be any criminal penalties for committing that murder?
I think women get into pregnancy situations and they should not ever be punished for having gotten there. And for whatever they see as the right way out of that. I think it's wrong to punish these women, no matter which way they decide.
Okay. On the subject of health care as well, there's a lot of talk about drugs as a criminal or a medical problem. There's talk about legalization of marijuana on the national level. Could you see yourself voting for legalization of marijuana?
I'm not on fire either way. I understand taking money away from the cartels is a good idea. I understand that marijuana is not really all that harmful. On the other side of the coin, do we really need a bunch of stone people walking, driving around, trying to raise their kids at night, stoned? My heart is, do we really need legalization of marijuana? And I'm not all that in favor of it.
On your website, you talk about opioids, but what I'm reading on your website, at least, it sounds like you care very deeply, but I'm still kind of struggling to see what you would do. So let me quote your website and you can tell me more about your thoughts on opioids. You write, "More funding for rehabilitation and treatment services will certainly help, but I believe more must be done to get us out of this national health crisis entirely. In Congress, I will use my experience as a physician to help Congress eliminate the stigma of opioid addiction and take a medicinal approach to help our neighbors who are struggling with addiction," end quote. So I want to help me see what that actually means in practice.
Correct. 220 people died in Monroe County of drug overdoses in 2017. That sentence, drop the mic and walk out of the room, our hair should be on fire. 220 otherwise healthy people wound up dead. And if it were any other disease, we would have unlimited checkbook to stop that. Ebola. If Ebola came to Monroe County and 220 people died, there would be no end of funding to get rid of it. I think the confusion is that opioid addiction is a fault. People have judgy eyes. And it at base is a medical problem. It is not the fault of the people who are addicted. It is not their fault. It is a medical condition and should be treated medically. And I know it's a multi-pronged thing. There should be law enforcement, interdiction of fentanyl at the port of entry, and on and on and on and on and on. But we need more of everything. And the two things that are going to make a difference is, number one, understand it's a medical condition, and number two, get rid of the judgy eyes.
Winding down to the end of the hour with Dr. Jim Maxwell, running for Congress in the 25th Congressional District. And this is his first visit. I know he'll be back here in many different places here on Connections, we hope, and I assume with a debate as well with Joe Morelli before the election in November. You write on your website about the national debt. You're concerned about what we're handing off to our next generations. And you say that you want to address the $20 trillion national debt, but then you say you want to help pass balanced budgets. Balancing a budget, I understand, is hard enough by Washington standards, but that doesn't eat into the debt. You'd have to go a long way in the other direction of overbalancing a budget, of kind of starting to pay down the debt. Can you realistically go to Congress thinking you're going to vote on budgets that would start paying down the national debt?
Yes. Yes. I told you, I have 5 grandkids. We've maxed out my credit card, national credit card, my kids' national credit card, and my grandkids' national credit card. I cannot look at my kids or my grandkids and say, I'm going to leave you a national debt that will equal GDP in 2025.
Sure.
That is a moral sin.
So where do you start with the cuts? That's a lot to kind of pare down.
Right. It is. There are things that should be funded and things that are less important.
For example?
Opioids should be maximally funded. 220 citizens of Monroe County are dead on the streets in 2017. There is no limit to what we got to spend to get that done. What was the limit that the American government put on overturning Hitler? There was no limit. There was no limit to how much we would spend to win World War II. That's the attitude I have toward opioid. Subsidies for sugarcane growers in Lake Okeechobee? Let's talk.
But you're going to have colleagues in Lake Okeechobee who say, that's my issue.
I don't care. I only am responsible to people in Monroe County. That's all I care about. They are my people. I want to be their congressman. And Lake Okeechobee can be Lake Okeechobee.
30 seconds. You're going to talk more about Mr. Morelli when we hopefully get together with all of us here. Do you know him well, and what do you think of his record?
I've never met him. I don't know him. I have somewhat the same problem with him as I had with Louise Slaughter. Long-term seat in the legislature. And I'll say it this way. When ships are in the harbor for 30 years, they grow barnacles on the hull, and their effectiveness is less. And that's what I think.
His website is drjimmaxwell.com, drjimmaxwell.com. This is his first run in politics. If you win election, I hope you come back and you spend a lot of time with the listeners here and in many places. You're going to continue to be accessible.
I shall.
And Jim Maxwell will also be back here on this program, and I know there will be debates coming up in the fall. Thanks for taking the time. Let's do it again.
Evan, thank you.
DrJimMaxwell.com, the Republican running in the 25th District. More connections coming up.